There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. And tonight we have a super scary collection of terrific tales. We will join the weird circle and enter the squeaky inner sanctum door. And who's to say if we will live to return or die from fright? Yes. That is, of course, unless... You are already dead, huh? Some of us are more fortunate than others, eh? Take Henry Carter III, for instance. He's young, rich, and bubbling with life. It's enough to make a guy like me thirsty, huh?
spooky.
But Henry has a problem. He gambles. And tonight, he will wind up betting his life. Yes, it's the Whistler on Mystery Playhouse. Take it away!
Tales of the Whistler.
I'm the Whistler.
I didn't see the man, I swear I didn't. He just appeared out of nowhere. I didn't see a thing. I only heard that awful thump when the car hit him. It was an accident, I tell you.
Friday night, and again, CBS presents The Whistler.
I, the Whistler, know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. And so I tell you tonight the odd story of Blind Alley. Young Henry Carteret III and his widowed mother live with Henry's paternal grandfather. Grandfather Carteret is immensely wealthy and lives on a vast estate in the suburbs. Young Henry, after graduation, seemed to follow in the footsteps of his late father. He's a weak sort and quite the playboy of the city, gambling and drinking. So grandfather, though inclined to be generous, finds it necessary to cut down on Henry's allowance.
But, Grandfather, I can't get along now. I can hardly make ends meet. But it's embarrassing.
Embarrassing? Huh. For a whole year now, all you've done is gad about all night and drink and gamble. Well, I've paid all the debts I'm going to.
Well, what can I do on $100 a
week? When I was your age, I got along on $10 a week.
But times have changed since you were a boy.
You're just like your father. Physical wreck and in his grave before he was 35.
Oh, well, he did everything to excess.
He was my son. I know what he did. Started out just like you. But each day he got a little worse. He was smart, too. He knew just when to slow down.
I know how to handle myself.
You've got nothing around you but a bunch of leeches.
Oh, you're just soured on everything and everybody.
Some of your friends you've had around here would sicken anybody with horse sense.
And you refuse to give me an extra $100 tonight?
I won't give you 10 cents.
I'd rather die before I'm 40 than be like you.
You keep on the way you are, and you'll get your wish.
Can I have $50?
If you say another word, I'll stop your allowance completely, do you hear?
What is it, Henry? What's wrong, darling?
Oh, nothing, Mother, nothing at all. Grandfather's on one of his economy rampages.
Oh, but darling, your grandfather is right. You're only harming yourself.
Well, what good is money if you can't use it?
Depends on how you use it.
Oh, he couldn't spend his money in the next 50 years if he tried.
No, but you certainly could.
Well, what are you going to do with it?
Leave it to you, providing you get some sense in your head. If you don't, I'll leave it to a home for indigent cats. What you need is a good solid jolt in the solar plexus, and that's just what you're heading for.
Please, Henry, run along. I can't stand any more of this.
$20. I can't even take a girl to dinner.
No, not the kind you know.
Please go,
All Henry. Right, Mother.
And if I get lost in the big city, I promise I'll go to the big policeman and tell him who I am.
Oh, if he only knew what I went through with his father.
Yeah, I know, Mary. Some fellows just have to be beaten over the head with a club before they wake up. Well, I'll do my best, Mary.
For several weeks, Henry has been making the rounds of the nightclubs and gambling places with his latest girlfriend, Nella Goodwin of the Boston Goodwin. Nella and her brother Jerry have been vacationing in the vicinity. The three of them have made the rounds and have dropped into Nella's apartment for a nightcap.
Well, I certainly had a wonderful time tonight, Henry.
Did you, Nella? Well, so did I. But I was so sure I'd clean up on that roulette wheel.
You can't win all the time. Here's your drink.
Thanks. Let's see, how much did I borrow from you, Jerry?
Oh, just 100.
No, I'll let you have it in a couple of days.
No hurry.
Really think you should drink any more tonight, Henry? Why not have some coffee?
Coffee? Perish the thought, who wants coffee?
How far do you have to drive? 20 miles, isn't it?
Oh, he'll be all right when he gets out in the air.
Oh, I don't know, Jerry, it isn't safe. I wouldn't want you to get into trouble, Henry. Please drink some coffee. Please.
Oh, darling, don't worry. I've driven that strip along the coast 100 times.
Yes, but you've drunk more than usual tonight.
Maybe.
I wouldn't be able to sleep a wink.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll phone you when I get home.
Why not stay in town tonight?
Nella, why don't you let him alone? He'll be all right.
Henry, let Jerry and me drive you home in our car. How about it, Jerry?
Whatever you say.
No. I'll tell you what. I got a better idea. You two get your things and drive home with me and stay over the weekend.
Weekend?
Sure, stay as long as you like. It's a regular resort. Lots of things to do. Plenty of fun. You come with me, and if you're afraid of my driving, then you can drive. Fair enough?
Okay. Now, how about it, Nora?
Well, if Henry insists on driving home tonight, I'd rather see that he gets there.
Great, that's wonderful. Go on, get your things, and let's be on our way. Well, how am I doing? Satisfactory, am I?
Well, I'd feel better if you'd slow down a bit. It's
beginning to mist. Better take it easy, Henry.
Okay. Does that suit you?
Take us about an hour or more, won't it?
This nail's big.
Why not let me drive?
No, I'm all right. I feel swell.
Let Jerry drive.
No. Clear sailing from here on. I like me a cigarette, Nella. My case is in my right pocket.
All right. Cigarette, Jerry?
Yeah, thanks.
Henry, look out!
What was it? We hit something.
Yes, it was a man.
A man? Oh, good Lord.
Yes, there he is at the edge of the road. Oh, Henry.
I see him. Stay in the car. I'll have a look.
Is he all right, Jerry?
Just a second.
Jerry.
Not a sign of a pulse.
Dead? Oh, but I wasn't going fast. I couldn't have hit him very hard.
I know, but he's an elderly guy.
Jerry, what do we do? We've got to do something.
Yeah, but... Hey, there's a car coming. Way back there, look. We got to get out of here. They'll smell liquor if they stop, and Henry's driving, and he's tight.
What do we do?
Look, it's a red light. Police. We've got to get that body off the road. They'll see it and chase us. Get out, Henry. I'll jerk a wire loose on the distributor. You're having trouble, see? Take it easy and don't get excited. I'll carry this guy over behind that big sign. When you find the trouble, the two of you drive on. I'll meet you back at the apartment. I'll get there as soon as I can.
Here they come. Don't be nervous, Henry.
I feel kind of sick now.
What's trouble here?
Why, I don't know. Motor just cut out on me.
Yeah? Battery's all right. It's got lights. Let's have a look. The wires... Oh, wait a minute. Here it is, I think. That wire was loose on top of the distributor. All right, try it now. There you are.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much, officer.
Out kind of late, aren't you? 1:30?
Why, I'm on my way home.
Yeah? It's your car?
Yes.
Henry Carteret III. You young Carteret? Let's see your operator's license. Thanks. You've been drinking a bit, haven't you, Carteret?
Well, yes, but I'm a careful driver.
What's your name, miss?
Nella Goodwin.
You drive?
Oh, yes.
Then you better slip over here and drive this car. Now, good night, Carteret. Take it easy,
miss. Yes, officer. Thank you.
John Carteret. Had a loose wire. Let's get going, Joe.
In a few minutes, the police car passes them. Nella leaves the highway, cuts over to the boulevard, and heads back to town. In Nella's apartment, they wait for Jerry. 3 hours pass, and finally, Jerry walks in.
Jerry, where on earth have you been? We thought you'd never get here.
I stayed behind that big sign for over an hour. Every time I started out, a car came along. Finally, I made it over to the boulevard. I couldn't find a cab, so walked back down side streets. Didn't want anybody to see me like this.
Where did you get all that mud on you? What did you do with it?
No, don't worry. Everything's all right.
What did you do with the body?
I buried it back of the sign. I found a small board. The dirt is soft and the brush is thick. No one will ever find him.
Buried him?
Sure. If we reported it now or anyone found him on the road, those cops would be after Henry in a second.
Who was the man?
Well, he didn't have anything on him. Only a few cents in his pocket and no identification. I gather from his appearance and his clothes that he was just a trenchant, a hobo. Probably stepped out in front of us to bum a ride.
Was he an old man?
I'd say about 50 or more.
Oh, it's awful. I didn't see him. He just seemed to come out of nowhere. I didn't see a thing. I only heard that thump when the car hit him.
It was an accident, Henry. We know that. It was a lucky thing for you. I got him off the road. Those cops had found him, and with you drinking, well, you'd get stuck for manslaughter. I'm mighty lucky I was alone.
Yes, I know. I appreciate it, Jerry.
You don't think we should have reported it?
Would you like to see Henry sentenced to prison for accidentally running into some old bum?
No, Jerry, but I was afraid of something like this. That's why I didn't want him to drive.
I'm sorry, Nella. I should have listened to you. Oh, what a mess. It's terrible.
Will you relax?
Well, you're sure they won't find him?
When they do, they'll have forgotten about you being stalled there. Oh, by the way, just where was I?
Well, it's practically at the intersection of Ocean Drive and Valley Boulevard. It was in front of that big billboard, that red sign.
Oh, yeah. Let's forget about it. It's done, and the less said about it, the better. Better have a drink, Henry, and as soon as I change my clothes, we'll go on to your place. You're spoiling that weekend.
I don't want a drink.
Okay. I'll be ready in a few minutes.
All the rest of the night and morning, Henry is shaken. He cannot close his eyes. And finally, he musters sufficient strength to dress. Downstairs, his grandfather is talking to Jerry and Nella.
And what did you say your name was?
Goodwin, Gerald Goodwin. The Boston Goodwins, you know.
The Boston Goodwins?
This is my sister, Nella.
I see. Came down with Henry, eh? And what time did you get here?
Well, it was late. That is, early this morning.
It was about 6, to be exact.
6? Don't you people ever sleep?
Well, certainly we sleep, but, well, youth doesn't require the amount of sleep that age needs.
And what are you doing here?
Henry invited us to spend a week or so with him.
Oh, is that so?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's mighty decent of him.
Henry's a wonderful boy. He really is, Mr. Carteret.
All depends on how you look at it.
You should think a lot of Henry.
I do. Believe me, I think constantly.
Good morning. I don't think I know these people. Or do I?
No, you don't, Mary. But you will. Henry's guest came in at 6 this morning. Oh. Here for a bit of a stay from Boston. Jerry Goodwin and his sister, Nella Goodwin, of the Boston Goodwins. This is Henry's mother.
How do you do, Mrs. Carteret?
Well, you're quite welcome. We really didn't want to impose on you, but Henry was so insistent that... Well, we really came because...
Because Henry wouldn't take no for an answer.
And where is Henry?
Well, I don't think Henry is feeling well this morning.
You mean Henry has been drinking?
Well, yes, a little.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, that's why we came with him. I was afraid for him to drive home last night.
She's exaggerating, Mrs. Carteret.
Tell me, how long have you known Henry, Miss Goodwin?
About 3 weeks. Going on 4.
Are you the one who's been taking to dinners and nightclubs?
Yes, I've seen him nearly every evening.
Oh, I see.
Oh, good morning, Mother. Morning, everybody. Well, I see you've all gotten acquainted.
Henry, why, you're pale as a sheet. I've never seen you like this.
I'm quite all right, Mother.
I'd have sworn it was your father coming down those steps. Hold your hands out. Look at that. The jitters. Well, you're doing all right, boy. Don't you worry about being a sour old tyke.
Oh, shut up and let me alone, will you?
Henry, what is it? What's wrong with you?
There's nothing wrong.
He'll be all right. He had a very bad night, didn't you, Henry?
Jerry.
Well, first he lost too much, then he drank too much to cover up the losses.
I'll pay you $100.
Oh, don't be silly. I'm not worried. I'm only kidding. Come on, let's have some breakfast and forget about it. Come on, everybody.
Oh, pardon me. Would I be intruding? I haven't had breakfast yet. Do you mind?
Why, certainly not. Come along.
Before the day is over, Grandfather is boiling. He can't stand the impudence of Jerry. But Henry is still unable to control his nerves. He can't get the highway accident off his mind. And Jerry becomes bolder and bolder. Jerry has the upper hand now. And Henry realizes he is completely at the mercy of Nella's brother.
But
But you've got to get hold of yourself, Henry. You've got to.
I can't get it off my mind.
Oh, calm down and quit prancing about. What good does it do? Besides, you've nothing to worry about. No one knows but the three of us.
But the police didn't see you there.
That's right. Just you and Nella. And obviously, you were driving.
What are you talking about, Jerry?
You don't have a thing to worry about for me, Henry. Not a thing. I'm perfectly satisfied with things the way they are. Of course, I may ask a little favor of you now and then, but nothing to worry about.
Favor? What do you mean?
Why don't you forget about it now? You'll drive yourself crazy.
What do you mean by favors?
Forget about it. Just forget I mentioned it. I wouldn't dream of saying anything about what happened last night to your grandfather or your mother. What kind of a rat do you think I am? That's terrible. Family name like yours, well, they wouldn't be able to stand such a thing. Oh, no, Henry, you've nothing to worry about.
No.
Jerry hasn't made himself clear. He's trying to tell you that he wants to help you. Aren't you, Jerry?
Well, certainly. What else? Well, what on earth? I get it now. Henry thought that... Oh, for the love of Mike, pull yourself together, Henry. Don't be so ridiculous.
Well, I'll run along. Maybe if I take some tablets, I'll be able to see.
Jerry, you're at it again. Now, please get out of here and leave these poor people alone.
Poor people?
I like Henry. I'm crazy about him. And I want you to leave him alone. I know what you're planning.
Oh, shut up. Who are you to talk? The good ones of Boston. Sure, but what have we got? Nothing. We've been living for years on our name. We winter in Florida and we summer in Maine without a dollar. And here we are again. Only this time it's a little better. This old grandpa is going to kick off and leave millions to Henry. And with what we know, well, we can stay here forever.
I won't.
You will.
I like Henry too much. I love Henry.
Huh? Well, I can't see a thing wrong with that. No, not a single thing. In fact, I approve. See you later, Nella.
Poor Henry is licked. He knows Jerry has him by the nose, but he's helpless. Completely helpless. Finally, Monday comes, and Grandfather calls Henry to the library.
Did you want me, Grandfather?
I certainly did. Why, what's wrong? The bank just called me and said you'd overdrawn your account $1,000.
$1,000? Oh, well, I haven't.
What did you do with the money? Did the bank pay it?
Certainly they paid it.
What did you do with that money?
Well, I owed a debt to Jerry Goodwin.
I heard him say you owed him $100.
Well, he was just going easy. It was really $1,000.
Henry, you're lying. You hear me? Lying.
No, I owed it to him because of, well, gambling.
I don't believe you. Not this time. It's something else. I've been suspicious from the moment they walked into this house. There's something going on. That Jerry is too smart, too cocky. There's something afoot, and I want to know what it is.
There's nothing, nothing. Please believe me.
I don't believe you. And you'll tell or get out of this house and stay out.
Wait a minute, Mr. Carter. Henry will tell you.
Nella, you keep out of this.
Then I'll tell. If he gave that money to my brother, then I think I know why.
Why?
Because Jerry knows something that Henry doesn't want told.
What?
Keep still. Get out of here, Nella. Get out.
This is blackmail.
What else?
Then why do you tell me this?
Well, because I love Henry. With all his faults, I'm crazy about him. And I know my brother, and I can guess why Henry gave him the money.
I owe it to him. I owe him thousands more. Now get out of here, Nella.
Henry had to pay him, Mr. Carter, and he had to. Jerry knows too much about Henry.
It's blackmail. I'll call the police.
No, please. Please don't do that, please.
Well, what's going on? What's all the racket?
You'll find out. Blackmail. I'll have you in jail.
No, I'll tell you. I'll tell you. Jerry saved me from prison. I killed a man accidentally. Ran over him on the ocean road.
What?
Yes. And I was drinking. We saw a police car coming, and Jerry got the body off the road just in time. He pulled a wire in the motor, and the officers helped me fix it, and Jerry... Well, Jerry got me out of it.
I see. And where did it happen?
On Ocean Drive, near Valley Boulevard. I buried the body back of the big billboard. The bread sign on Ocean Drive. So you see, everything's all right. I did my best, and no one will discover the body for a long time. There's no identification of it.
Good Lord.
It was an accident, Mr. Carter. It really it was. Henry didn't see him. I swear he didn't. It was misting. I wanted to report it, but the police were almost there, and Henry was drinking, and, well, it would have meant manslaughter.
I've never been so shocked in my life. Your mother must not know of this.
I've really done you a favor, Mr. Carter.
Leave me alone. All of you. I want to think.
A death-like silence falls over the household. Very little is said until afternoon of the next day. The grandfather calls the three young people to the library, but at that very moment, a visitor is announced. The visitor steps into the library.
Hi, Mr. Cartwright. Did you wish to see me?
Well, not exactly. I wanted to see your grandson here, Henry Cartwright.
Who are you?
I'm Lieutenant Jones, police department.
Well, what can we do for you, Lieutenant?
Who are these people?
This is Mr. Goodwin and Nella Goodwin, our guest at the moment.
You're Nella Goodwin?
Yes.
Well, I have a little report here. On the morning of August 17th, about 1 a.m., a patrol car came upon Henry Cartwright and assisted him to get his car started. A girl with him gave her name as Nella Goodwin. It was near the intersection of Ocean Drive and Valley Boulevard. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I did have trouble, didn't I?
Mm-hmm. How long were you there?
About 10 minutes.
I see. Did you happen to notice another car leave as you pulled up, or did you see anyone else in the vicinity?
I don't remember.
Did you, Miss Goodwin?
Well, I can't remember, but there may have been.
Did either of you step off the highway during that time?
No. No, that is, I may have, but I...
I don't think we did.
Mm-hmm. You stopped directly in front of that big billboard, the one advertising bread?
Yes.
What is this all about?
Well, they removed that billboard and started excavating for a new project today. They discovered a body. A man about 50. Been dead several days. Apparently struck by a car. Might have internal injuries.
Well, we didn't see a thing.
You know nothing about it, miss?
No, certainly not.
What's your relation to Henry Cartwright?
Well, no relation.
I see. Well, let me ask you to drop down to headquarters for a little talk, Miss Goodwin. Good afternoon, folks.
He's wise. They're going to get Nella down there and make her talk.
I won't go.
You'll have to go.
I won't go. I won't talk if they kill me.
They know you were with Henry, and they'll hammer you until... Wait a minute. I've got it. There's one way they can't make you say a word.
How's that?
Nella and Henry have got to get married at once. A wife cannot be made to testify against her husband.
Married?
But Jerry, he doesn't want to marry
me. There's no choice. It's the only chance. Come on, let's get going. They'll be back.
Grandfather, what'll I do? Figure it out yourself. This is that jolt in the middle you've had coming to you. Oh, what have I ever done to deserve this? Come on, Nella, hurry. Hurry.
Oh, Henry, darling, married. I can't believe it. Why didn't you tell me? Why?
Calm down, Mary. He's married, and that's all there is to it.
But I never heard of such a thing. What was the rush?
We had to get married, Mrs. Cartwright. We had to. But don't worry. I love Henry.
Married? Oh, I think I shall faint.
Yes, yes, yes. But I'll explain later, Mary.
Pardon me. There's a Mr. Jones to see you, sir.
I knew it. They're back again.
Mary, please go to your room. I'll come to you in a little while. I'll explain.
Yes. Yes, Father. Oh, I've never been so shocked in all my life. Henry, your father was bad enough, but this is beyond all sense of decency.
Well, what do you want now, Lieutenant?
I'd like to have a talk with Miss Goodwin down at headquarters.
Oh, but...
Well, maybe that won't be necessary after all. Is this your cigarette case, Henry?
What? I don't know. I don't think so.
Oh? Well, this was found a few feet from the grave on the other side of the billboard. It has initials on it. H.C. Of course, we have ways of tracing the owner to the jewelry.
Maybe it belonged to the dead man.
No. He's been identified as Peter Lund, Francis.
And suppose you couldn't find the owner of that case?
We'll find the owner.
Can I see the case?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Oh, rather expensive. Handmade. Cost about $100, I'd say.
A dead man's fingerprints weren't on it.
I imagine this case is worth considerably more now than it cost originally. Prices have gone sky high. Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if a case like this wouldn't be worth, well, a pretty penny.
Yes. I imagine some people would pay up in the thousands for a case like that. Did you ever hear of bribery, Mr. Cartwright?
No. But I have a couple of friends heading the police commission, and I've heard of shake-ups and pounding the pavement.
Can I see you alone, Mr. Cartwright?
Yes, Lieutenant. Step into the library.
Look, Mr. Cartwright, I know you're a big shot in this county, and, I'm only trying to do my duty. I don't want to cause you any trouble, but then if
there's... Does anyone other than you know about this cigarette case at headquarters?
No.
Jones? Here's $1,500 for that cigarette case. How about it?
I don't want to go back to pounding a beat. I guess you've got me. I'm stuck. Poor guy hasn't got a chance. Okay, here's the case.
Here's your money. And I'll see about a promotion for you.
I'm satisfied if I can just stay where I am. Well, I'll be running along, Mr. Carteret.
Mr. Carteret, don't do it. Please don't.
What? Don't do what?
Henry didn't leave the pavement that night. I swear he didn't. Someone planted that cigarette case there. I know who did it, and I know why.
Are you crazy?
You had the case last, Jerry. Henry did hit the man. It was an accident, but you carried the body behind the sign and buried it. You put the case there purposely.
Shut up.
Sick and tired of living by your rotten schemes. From hand to mouth on other people for years. Blackmail, extortion, anything you could think of. But I'm through with you, brother or no brother.
You're a fool, Nella. You've just sentenced Henry to the penitentiary. All three of us.
Then we'll all three go to prison. I don't care.
Please, Nella, please.
Henry, you're a weak-kneed jellyfish. If you had any gumption, you'd poke him in the jaw. You know he's a crook.
Shut up!
And there's something phony about that cigarette case. I don't know what it is, but... Well, if you planted it there, you were stupid. And if you dropped it, you're stupider still. And I don't think you did either.
Will you shut up?
Wait a minute. Wait, if that cigarette case was there when they tore the sign down... Why didn't Lieutenant Jones mention it when he first came here?
Well, we didn't find it till the next day.
Lieutenant Jones, that cigarette case was never near that sign. My brother gave you that case. You're in with him on this. More blackmail.
Good girl, good girl. You're wonderful, marvelous, cooking with gas.
She's crazy.
Come in, Captain Gibson.
Yes,
step in here, please. Hey, did you hear this? Did you hear what they said, Captain?
I heard, and so did the sergeant.
Then take them away. Take both of them away and put them on the first train out of town. Let them keep the money. But put them on the first train. I'll prefer no charges, providing they get out of town and stay out.
Grandfather, I don't understand.
Jones isn't a police lieutenant, and there's no body buried back of that billboard. I suddenly remembered that whole block belonged to me. I hadn't sold it, so why would they be excavating?
No body?
I checked with Captain Gibson here, and there was no Lieutenant Jones. There was not even a trace of a grave back of that sign.
Well, then what became of the man I hit?
I'll explain that in just a minute, son. Just a minute.
And what about the girl, Mr. Carteret?
Nella, my granddaughter. She's the first bit of red blood we've had in this family for years. Now put that phony Lieutenant Jones and Jerry in the cooler for 24 hours. Then put them on trains going in different directions. If they come back in less than 10 years, they're crazy.
Yes, sir.
I'll show them how to monkey with the president of the police commission.
Well, there's very little to explain this time. Jerry Goodwin discovered the man was not dead the moment he felt his pulse. And when he regained consciousness back of the big billboard, well, Jerry took him across town to a hotel. Later, he arranged with him to pose as a detective and frighten Henry and Nella into marriage. And the supposed victim and Jerry would carry on a lucrative blackmail scheme from then on. But they never dreamed that the grandfather owned the lot where the corpse was supposed to have been buried. And that was where they slipped. But grandfather is proud of his spunky granddaughter-in-law, and Henry will be a good boy from now on.
CBS has presented The Whistler. Original music for this production was composed by Wilbur Hatch and conducted by Ivan Ditmars. The Whistler is written and directed by J. Donald Wilson and originates from Columbia Square in Hollywood. Beginning Sunday, October 3rd, The Whistler will come to you at 10:15 p.m. Sunday, October 3rd, at 10:15 p.m. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, my goodness, that was scary, scary, scary. What a story, huh, kids, huh? I knew from the beginning it was going to be a hit. and run. Oh, yes. I don't know about you, but I was amazed at just how the victim bounced back, eh? Afraid so. I guess he wasn't seriously injured after all. You might say he was just a little tired, huh? I bet even the next day he looked somewhat run down, huh? Afraid so. Spooky, huh? That's how I would have known he was the imposter cop. I'd say, hey, you look exhausted, huh? Oh, please. Yes, really, huh? Now that brother, now, the way he behaved, that was no accident, eh? Oh, sorry. But it's true. No, it's true. He was the most conniving man I've ever heard. I wouldn't even call him a man. I just call him a male. A black male, huh? But they both got what was really coming to them. You might say from here on out, their life is really on the skids, huh? Yes. Thank you. No, really, really. And so now we must turn to our next feature. Thank you. From the time-worn pages of the past, it's The Weird Circle. So scary!
Weird Circle. In this cave by the restless sea, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, The Haunted Hotel.
Venice is a beautiful city. Its climate is ideal, its buildings picturesque, its atmosphere charming. But I felt almost physically incapable of pleasure as the oarsman tied his gondola to the castle hotel mooring. For in my brain there was just one thought. I kept flying around and around like an imprisoned bat. Why is Philip dead? And it was this that had brought me clear across an ocean to Venice.
Good evening, Signor.
You have a reservation for Henry Westwick?
Yes, Signor. It was you who requested the northeast room on the ground floor, was it not?
That's right, overlooking the canal.
You are lucky. In the very next mail, another American named Miss James asked for the same room.
Huh?
But, of course, you had the priority.
Oh, I'm Miss James. Does that mean I can't have room 14?
Sorry, Signorina, I am afraid so. Unless, of course, you can persuade Mr. Westwick to trade with you. Yours is number 15, next door to the young man here, but without a view of the canal.
You wouldn't like to exchange, would you, Mr. Westwick?
I wish I could be more gallant, Miss James, but I have a special reason for wanting 14.
Boy?
Yes?
Take these bags, room 14 and 15. Just follow the page, senor, signorina.
Thank you.
A special reason? You sound so mysterious.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm here to solve a mystery.
Really? Oh, please tell me about it. Oh, that is, if you don't mind.
No, I think I'd like to, Miss James. Just to make up for not being able to switch rooms with you. 6 weeks ago, my brother married. It was very sudden. He'd met this Countess Nerone and her brother Rivar while traveling through Italy. Fallen deeply in love with her. And they came here to spend their honeymoon.
Oh, I thought the hotel opened just last week.
Oh, it did. This was formerly an old castle. Philip rented it for a month. He was scheduled to leave the day before remodeling began.
But something happened?
He was only here 2 weeks when he died.
How shocking.
Not only that, but when I wrote to his wife for more particulars, I got no reply. She and her brother seemed to have vanished off the face of the earth. It took me a month to wind up my business affairs, but I'm determined to stay here until I find out exactly what happened to Philip. How? Why?
Yes, I can understand how you'd feel about your brother, Mr. Westwick. But you haven't told me the reason you want room 14.
Oh, that was the master bedroom. I've got a hunch. If Norona left any clue, it would be there.
Here are your rooms, sir, madame.
Well, good night and very good luck.
I'll see you around tomorrow evening, won't I, Miss James?
I think so. After all, we Americans have got to stick together. And, Henry?
Yes?
My first name's Elaine.
I went into my own room, shut the door, and immediately that overwhelming sense of depression closed in on me again. For a few minutes there in the hall, Elaine's warmth and vitality had dispelled it. Now, alone, in the very place of my brother's death, I felt more than ever confused and discouraged. Where to start my search? I didn't know. But as I crept between the cool sheets, I thought, oh, how much this room could tell me. If it would only speak. If I were only sensitive enough to grasp what it was saying. Then I just drifted aimlessly with the sound of the canal in my ears, lifting me up, bearing me along like a bit of wood on its surface. For a while, I didn't realize the sound had changed, that it had become a murmur of voices speaking fluent Italian. But then I began to see them, a man and a woman. Their images were slightly distorted, like an improperly focused motion picture. And even through my dream, I knew I was outside the scene, invisible to them, an audience of one.
How can you ask that of me, Rival? You're my brother, the only one on earth I care about. How can you ask me to sacrifice myself to
that unattractive boor of an American? Do you think I'm unaware of your feelings, Nerona? That I'm totally blind to how much it repels you? But what can I do? They're after me again for my gambling debts. And those men are vicious, completely unprincipled. Why, killing me would mean as little to them as snapping a toothpick. And surely you don't want my death on your soul.
Oh, please, Rival. Don't try to work on my sympathies. You sound like such a fool.
But, Nerona, he's not an unkind man. Didn't he lease this castle for us and let us move in just on the hope that you'd marry him?
Keep still, can't you?
Very well. I shall send Westwick a note by messenger saying I accept his proposal.
What's today's date, Rivar?
It's the 16th. December 16th. And thank you, Nerona.
I don't know which happened first. The screen going blank or my mind refusing any more of the vision. But suddenly I found myself sitting up straight in bed, my eyes wide open, my hands digging convulsively into the quilt on each side of my sweat-soaked body. Oh, what a horrible nightmare, I thought. And perhaps I could have accepted it as such, except for one thing. In the dream, there had been a waste paper basket near Nerona's desk, with a newspaper lying on top of it. And while I could not see the Countess nor her brother clearly, the date of that paper had been quite plain. December 15th. And my brother had written to me that his fiancée was so eager for their marriage, she had inadvertently dated her acceptance a day ahead. That detail had left my mind completely. Could this dream have been an extension of reality? The emotions undergone so vivid they had left their impress on the walls, be returned to whomever would receive them? I did not sleep much the rest of the night. I spent the next afternoon in a thoroughly fruitless search for some clue to Nerona's present whereabouts. Was rather glad by 8 o'clock to shower and change clothes at the hotel. I'd just finished dinner and decided on a stroll when I heard Elaine calling me.
Henry! Hi! Do you always eat dinner so late? I waited for hours and hours, and then I decided I was just too hungry.
Well, I am flattered. Want to go for a walk with me?
I'd love to. And you needn't be so pleased with yourself. It really isn't any special accomplishment of your own that you're the only decent-looking male in the hotel.
Thank you for that left-handed compliment. And are you going to chase me all over the place, Elaine?
Oh, madly. Tell me, how did today's sleuthing go, Sherlock?
Oh, not very well, I'm afraid. The only new factor I've discovered is that no one in all Venice seems to have ever seen Nerona.
Why, that's incredible.
I know. But Philip alone signed the lease, and then he and Nerona and Rivar moved into the castle. That much the real estate agent told me.
How about the servants? Surely they must have seen her.
Well, there was only one. A man named Ferrari had been with the Countess a long time. And he's disappeared completely. Oh, I suppose they took him with them, wherever they've gone.
You have got a puzzle, haven't you?
Well, even if I did discover that Philip was murdered, I still don't have the faintest idea of what his murderess looks like. And nobody seems familiar with their titles.
Probably phonies.
Say, I never thought of that. You know, Elaine?
What?
I'm not sure, of course, but there really may be something under that hair.
Why, you... Oh.
Ouch.
And I shall wear my brass knuckles in the future.
Madam, please, I have a very delicate stomach. Didn't you hear the sound it made when you belted me?
Idiot. That was my bracelet. See? Six tiny sleigh bells on a silver chain.
Oh, well, I thought that they only put sleigh bells on horses.
Oh, you...
Ow! Maybe we'd better get back to the hotel before you really get angry. Then you'll have to carry me home. I'd never met a girl like Elaine before. Pretty, intelligent, with a sense of humor, all at the same time. It was with the greatest reluctance that I finally consented to our saying goodnight, to making her promise that she'd see me next evening. But was that the only reason I wondered? Was I afraid that I might have another dream? I pulled the cover up to my shoulders. And almost instantly, as if it had been impatient for my coming, the dream began again.
I can't stand him any longer, River. Not another day. We've been married just 2 weeks, and already he's scrimping. Already he's being economical. Why don't you take the bus, Nerona, instead of a cab? It's just as comfortable.
And he seems to think that paying my debts absolves him of all other responsibility toward me. And what's more, that I should be eternally grateful to him for it. Has he said anything about those suits I bought?
No, he hasn't seen the bills yet. Oh, it's hard enough on you, I'll admit, but how about me? He just stays in that library, reading all the time, and refuses even to let me go outside the door without him. Rivar, I'm leaving him.
No.
Why not? We've paid off those gangsters you call your friends.
Look, let's not fool ourselves, Nerona. We'll always be spending more than we've got. We can't throw him away. Just yet.
Aaron Rivar, Mr. Westbrook wants to see you. I'm afraid it's that tailor bill.
Oh, Lord. Now I'll have to stand there like a disobedient little boy while he gives me a dressing gown.
I said I thought you were out of the house, but... But he'd seen you come in.
How's your cold, Ferrari?
Oh, not too good, Countess. Not too good.
If only there was some way to have Westwick's money without his presence. Or if we could just make a quick killing and... Yes, a quick killing.
River, no.
Do you want to live with that man the rest of your days? Tell me, Nerona, does your husband carry any life insurance?
All had gone black again. I was pushing desperately through the thick sludge of sleep, struggling back into consciousness. It was nearly dawn. The world from my window looked cool and clean and quiet. I was so shaken I could barely dress. But I knew only a long walk would calm my shivering nerves. And besides, there were a few telegrams I had to send. Telegrams which might clear up the mystery of Philip's death. The day went well, incredibly better than I'd hoped. And yet, getting my key from the desk that evening, I realized I was right back where I started. I walked down the corridor and hesitated in front of Elaine's door. Should I knock and say hello? Or wait till I was dressed for dinner? And that problem was quickly solved.
Good evening.
Well, how did you know I was here?
Well, ours are the only rooms at the end of this hall. I heard you walk by and stop, and no sound of a key.
For a moment, you had me worried. I thought you were psychic.
Oh, I am. Didn't you know? I'm the seventh daughter of a seventh son of a seventh son. They slipped me in because they thought they were getting in a rut.
Really? Oh, then I don't have to tell you what I found out today, do I? You know it already.
Oh, come on inside, you horrible creature, and stop keeping me in suspense. Now, tell me all about it.
Well, I feel like a pawn in a chess game, Elaine. The minute my side forges ahead, something occurs to checkmate it.
Like what, for instance?
Well, like discovering Philip had been insured for
$50,000. $50,000?
I telegraphed all the insurance companies in America today, and one of them cabled the information immediately.
Why, Henry, you're brilliant. Whatever gave you the idea?
Well, I've been having... It was just a hunch. They gave me the name of Philip's examining physician here in town who filled in the death certificate, and I checked up on him this afternoon.
Yes?
No. He's straight as a die. Got the best reputation of any doctor in Venice. Now, he swears my brother died of bronchitis, and, well, I'm sure the insurance examiners weren't any too cheerful about handing out $50,000, especially with only one premium paid on it, but they believed him.
Oh, that means a dead trail again, huh?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, Henry, I wish I could help you. If there were only something I could do.
I'll tell you what, Elaine. Get into a fluffy dress and clasp those funny little sleigh bells around your wrist, and we'll go out and really see Venice tonight.
Okay, Henry. I'll meet you in the lobby in 10 minutes. Henry, what is it? You've been trying to act gay all evening. That's exactly what it's been, an act.
I'm sorry, Elaine. I didn't mean to worry you with my troubles.
You worry me much more when you won't tell me. What worries you?
I know you're tired. It's nearly 2 o'clock and you've been yawning for the past half hour. Elaine, would you think me crazy if I told you I was afraid to go back into my room? Afraid to go to sleep?
But why?
I have the most hideous dreams. All about Philip and the Countess and her brother.
Oh, good heavens, Henry. That's perfectly natural. The three of them are constantly on your mind. And you are using your own as old room.
But the nightmares seem to be planned. They seem to have a purpose behind them.
Look, if you wish, I'll gladly change rooms with you.
No. No, thanks a lot, Elaine. But the least I can do for whatever's trying to give me the message is receive it. Good night, funny face. Sleep didn't come so easily now. Perhaps because I was too anxious to get into the dream, or because for the first time I'd acknowledged a complete belief in it. At any rate, my eyes simply wouldn't stay closed. My mind kept whirling ceaselessly. I tried to lie very quietly, without thrashing, and my body grew taut and straining with the effort. Finally, just as I felt I could stand this immobility no longer, the thread snapped. My brain went limp, and the shadow play continued.
Take another look, Riva. He promised he'd come immediately.
The doctor's not here yet, Nerona. Do you think I'm blind?
No. I'm sorry. It's just nervousness, I guess.
Poor sister. Never mind. It'll be all over with by tomorrow.
Countess?
Yes, Ferrari. Ah, but we should come to this, River. The only friend we have left. And we bury him in another's grave.
I don't mind, Countess. In fact, I should be flattered. Think how long I shall be pointed out as a millionaire instead of the pauper I really am. Twice before I had this illness, I knew a third attack would be fatal.
He's coming. Quickly now, Ferrari. Repeat your story.
Yes. I am Philip Westwick. Last week I caught cold, but I refused to have a doctor, even though my wife pleaded strenuously that I should. I hold a $50,000 policy on my life. At any event, of my death, I wished the doctor to communicate with him.
My wife will arrange all the funeral details and notify my relatives in America.
Right. Now, I must go into the library and find my husband. He'll be pleased to see me, I'm sure. There's a small jeweler's bill of mine he's taken in there to study. Oh, well, that'll soon be over for good. And it's most important Philip doesn't wander into this part of the house while the doctor's still here. That might prove awkward.
Nerona, when do we finish with Philip?
Tonight, after the doctor's safely gone.
How?
A knife.
But you know I can't stand the sight of blood.
Don't worry, I intend to do this thing myself. I do not propose to have it bungled. There, he's at the door now. Wait until I'm out of sight, then answer it. And Riva?
Yes?
If the doctor asks where Mrs. Westwick is, tell him my constant vigilance has tired me so. I'm asleep in another room.
Very well, Nerona. Very well.
The tableau faded slowly before my eyes, and try as my subconscious would to call it back, make it unreal further for me, the curtain remained stubbornly closed. I didn't wake after this dream, as I always had before, but sank into a dense, hypnotic slumber. Then I felt hot, bright fingers of sunlight touch my eyelids. I knew it was morning, and I awoke. Between bath and my breakfast, I formulated a final plan. Something in last night's vision had given me an idea. It was just a little lead, to be sure, but everything else had turned out in blind alley. So I had to try it. I was sitting on the floor in the library, surrounded by books, when Elaine walked in. Oh, looking for someone, lady?
What? Oh, Henry. Is this where you've been all afternoon? I just came in to get a magazine, because when you're not around, the hotel's so boring. Oh,
thank you for them kind words, ma'am. You can add them to my bill when I leave.
What are you doing? This another clue in the case of the missing counters? Or have you simultaneously lost your mind and found a new variation on paper dollies?
It's a clue, I think. Well, sit down here and make yourself useful.
All right. Now what?
Well, look through this pile of books and see if you can find a bill or a letter. I have reason to believe Nerona bought some jewelry.
So what? All women buy jewelry. Even I do.
If we can find out where she bought it, we'll be able to get her description. See?
Oh, of course. What a dope I am.
Well, I never argue with a lady.
Why?
Even if the bill's not here, it won't matter too much. I'll canvass every jewelry store in Venice till I hit the right one.
How come you're so sure of this angle, Henry? Did you find out something new?
Well, I had a dream about Nerona last night.
Oh, well, tell me, Henry. What does she look like? Is she beautiful?
It's funny, but I don't really know. It's as though I'm nearsighted and can't get the image distinctly. Heaven help me, I've tried. Hey.
What? Oh, Henry, it's a letter. Well, open it quickly. See if it's the one we want.
It is. A bill made out to Philip for 3,000 lira. Oh, Elaine, this is the break. This is the opening wedge. I've got a hunch that from now on the mystery's going to crack wide open. I'm going to phone this jeweler for an appointment.
I don't want to be a killjoy, Henry, but it says on the bill, store hours from 10 to 6. It's nearly 7 now.
Oh, well, it doesn't matter. I'll go tomorrow. Tonight we'll celebrate. We'll have truffles and nightingale's tongues and champagne. The works.
Anyway, Henry, we'll have the champagne.
Late that night, when we returned to the hotel, I felt more than ever that at last I was getting to the root of Philip's death. I crept into bed. I could wait for the dream calmly now, because I was no longer running around in circles, but right at the threshold to my brother's vengeance. I recognized the corridor outside my own door, and Rivar and Nerona walking softly toward it.
You're sure you can do it?
I'm not afraid. I'll go through with my end of it. Just be sure you don't mess up yours. Remember now, the biggest wine cask you can find in the cellar, and saw a wide enough hole in the top so the body will go through.
Have you got the knife?
Of course! Now go, for heaven's sake. You make me nervous.
I watched her with an icy, agonized horror no earlier dream had produced. She stealthily opened the door, and I could see Philip at the window, his back toward us, gazing out over the canal.
didn't seem to hear her footsteps sliding across the floor, coming nearer and nearer to him. I wanted to shout, scream at him, warn him against Narona. But I knew I was just a spectator, watching a hideous motion picture, and I could not change this ending. She stopped then, motionless, just in back of him. I saw her hand come up slowly, the short, slender knife, the blade glittering up brightly as the bracelet on her wrist. Just as it started downward for the final thrust, I heard a familiar sound. It was then I realized the dream had dissolved and that I was gazing up at reality. I grabbed her hand.
Oh, let me go.
Jane, who it was you?
Let me go.
No. Knifing one member of the Westwick family is quite enough. Countess Narona.
One moment more and you'd never have known my identity.
Yes, I would. I'd seen your hand with a knife, with a sleigh bell bracelet.
So, that gave me away, did it? The last thing your brother ever paid for alive, Henry. If you had not found the bill for it, I shouldn't have tried to kill you tonight.
No. When would you have tried to kill me, Countess?
Perhaps never. I liked you, Henry. River and I learned of your arrival from the shipping news while we were at Milan collecting Philip's insurance from the branch office there. I followed you, of course, to make sure you discovered nothing. However, we were both unfortunate.
Especially you, Narona. Walk in front of me to the telephone. I've got the dagger now, remember. Night clerk, will you please call the police? Tell them there's a murderess in room 14. Yes, thank you. Go on, Narona. What about your American accent? It's quite perfect.
I really am a countess, even though from an obscure town in Luxembourg. And I was given the appropriate education. I could speak 6 languages fluently at the age of 10. However, one cannot turn titles into bread nowadays, and so we had to live by our wits, Riva and I.
Come in.
Signora Westwick, they are here. Shall I send them in?
No. I shall go out to them. Henry, take this bracelet to remember me by. Such little bells. One would not think them capable of sounding a death knell.
Signora, the authorities grow impatient.
Of course. Goodbye, Henry.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Elaine.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
The Weird Circle is distributed exclusively by Nostalgia Broadcasting Corporation, Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Oh, boy! Was it that scary, kids, huh? It scared me. It made my blood run cold, huh? Yes. I'll say. So scary, and that woman, she was so poisonous, you might call her a black widow, huh? Really, really. She certainly spun one big web of deceit, eh? Yes, yes. It took a lot to go, what she did. I mean, legally, she was at the end of her thread, and yet she still hung around, huh? yes. I mean, he was bound to find out sooner or later. I mean, that's what she gets for bugging him, huh? thank you. And you know what I'm talking about, too. All that corny flirting and all. It was real corn on the cob. Ah, yes. Well, it's time for our next feature, because I have got to fly. So on to the inner sanctum door. I'll spare you all the insecticide jokes, huh? Wait, so, if you thought my puns were bad, wait till you hear this ghost host. Squeaky door, open sesame!
Romo Seltzer invites you through the creaking door for another inner sanctum mystery and reminds you to... To meet some new guests we've just dug up. Now, that peculiar cadaver standing off the corner by himself has a serious case of claustrophobia. Mm-hmm. Poor stiff, he just can't stand shrouds. Now, this fellow to your right was a mountain climber in life. He took his wife on an alpine hike, and while they were going up an icy slope, he cut the rope that held them together. Said he just couldn't stand being tied to one woman. And now, meet our most forgettable character, Wild-Eyed Willie. One day, Willie's ugly wife bit him. So, in anger, he buried her in the backyard. 6 months later, his homely mate came up as a dogwood tree to haunt him. Now, according to Willie, her bark is much worse than her bite. Tonight's Inner Sanctum Mystery, The Vengeful Corpse, was written by Ed Adamson and Bob Sloan and stars Barbara Weeks in the role of Sarah with Carl Swenson as Paul. Inner Sanctum is presented by the Emerson Drug Company of Baltimore, Maryland, makers of Bromo Seltzer. Remember, Bromo Seltzer is compounded by registered pharmacists. It fights headache three ways.
Bromo Seltzer helps your headache quickly, pleasantly, and it also soothes the upset stomach and jangled nerves that may team up with it.
No wonder druggists report that of all headache products dispensed to their fountains, the overwhelming favorite is Bromo Seltzer. Please, friends, absolute silence. We want it so quiet you can hear a head drop. In the small hillside New England cemetery, a chill evening wind stirs the leafless trees with a complaining murmur. A blood-red moon probes through the branches with grotesque fingers, touching the faded headstones with their eerie light. The frail, drawn-faced young woman sits on an old stone bench, listening acutely to the rustling of the branches, as if to capture some word whisper of the dead, forgotten past.
Sarah! Sarah! Sarah, where are you?
Oh, Paul, I'm here, over here.
Sarah, I've been looking all over for you. What are you doing out here anyway?
I was called out here, Paul.
What?
The wind. There was a voice on the wind, and it called me to come out here.
That's just in your mind, darling. No voice called you.
Yes, Paul, it did. I recognized the voice.
You recognized it? Then whose voice was it, dear?
It was old and tired and sort of cracked. And yet I could recognize it as my own voice.
You heard your own voice?
Yes, Paul. And it was strongest right here where I'm sitting now, among my family graves.
Hello there!
All that voice.
Hello!
It's just Mr. Griffin, the caretaker. I asked him to help me look for you.
Oh, well, I see you found your wife all right, eh, Mrs. Teton?
Yes, I found her, Mr. Griffin.
I thought I saw Mrs. Teton come to the graveyard here earlier. I didn't expect she'd still be...
Oh, well, what's wrong? What's the matter, Mr. Griffin?
Just that I get sort of a funny kind of feeling every time I pass this grave here.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
That grave, that one there, the one right next to you.
Why? What's the matter with it?
Well, ain't you noticed there's only one name on the headstone? The first name, Hester.
That's strange. My family name is Randolph. Wasn't this woman a Randolph?
Oh, you don't know the story?
What story are you talking about?
The kin who buried this Hester woman didn't think she deserved the family name, so they left it off the headstone.
Why? Why didn't they give Hester her full name?
Because they didn't want anybody to know who she was, I guess. You see, Hester was burned at the stake for witchcraft.
Witchcraft?
That's what they say.
Mr. Griffin, my wife is an ill woman as it is.
Let him go on, Paul.
No, but Sarah...
What else, Mr. Griffin?
Well, that's all, Mrs. Seaton, except that Hester claimed at the stake that they were burning an innocent woman. She could be heard shouting it as the flames licked around her. She threatened with her last breath to get even someday.
How could she get even?
I don't know, but according to the story I heard, Hester said that this here town owed her the years of her life that they took away.
Well, now, this is completely ridiculous. It's only a legend.
Mr. Griffin, tell me, how many years ago did all this happen?
Well, it's right here on the headstone, you see. Hester, a lost soul, born October the 13th, 1759, died... Good heavens!
What's wrong?
Oh, look, Mrs. Seaton... The date of Hester's death. It's worn away.
Sarah?
Yes, Paul.
What are you doing out of bed? When'd you get up?
Why, just a minute ago. I can't sleep. She keeps calling me. I hear her voice right here in this room. Just a few minutes ago.
What?
She was begging me to help her, telling me she never really lived and pleading with me to bring her back to life.
Sarah.
I thought I saw her.
No, Sarah, believe me.
She was dressed in a black dress and there was a large W on it. That's for witch. And in her hand she held a flaming torch.
I'm going to call the doctor, darling. This is not...
Someone's at the door.
All right, I'll see who it is.
No, wait. I'll go.
Good evening, Mrs. Seaton.
Why, Judge Foster.
I hope I didn't awaken you folks. I saw a light in the windows.
Oh, all right, Judge. Come right in.
Thank you. I'm sorry to bother you this time of the night, Mr. Seaton, but I was looking out of my window on the other side of the cemetery, and I thought I saw something or someone prowling around out there, and I wondered if they come over this way.
Who was it?
Well, I don't know. Someone carrying a torch.
A torch?
Go on, Judge.
Well, of course, it could be that my eyes were playing tricks on me. They're not so good. But as far as I could make out, it was a woman dressed in black.
Paul.
You saw this woman, Judge? You're sure?
Well, I'm pretty sure I saw her. Of course, it's kind of dark out there, but it looked to me like there was something on the front of her dress.
What do you mean?
Well, there was the letter W. A big white letter W on it.
It was Hester, just as
No, Sarah.
Hester? Who's Hester?
Hester Randolph. That's who you saw. She was in this house,
too. No, it must be a trick. You see, someone is trying to frighten you, to make you worse.
Now, hold on, folks. Hester Randolph was buried over 100 years ago.
She's come back to life.
Mrs. Seaton.
Judge, my wife is ill. She doesn't realize what she's saying.
I know Hester's alive. You didn't believe me, Paul, but Judge Foster saw her, too.
Well, I didn't see anybody who's been dead 100 years.
What is it, Judge?
Don't you smell it?
Yes.
Something burning.
This is the odor of burning flesh. Look, out there on the back lawn, stuck in the earth, a torch, a flaming torch. Sarah, I tell you, it's useless to have me dig up this grave.
I've got to know, Paul. It's the only way I'll be sure.
Now, careful, Mr. Seaton. You're just about deep enough for the coffin now, if it's still there.
Judge, I don't know how you can sanction a thing like this.
Well, Mr. Seaton, you see, I want to be sure, too.
Yeah, but it's ridiculous.
You've struck wood with the shovel. Yes, it's the coffin, all right. You better go easy now. That wood is soft with age and half rotted away.
I think we can open it now.
We wait, I'll give you a hand with the lid.
There's something inside it.
The body. Charred.
It's a body, all right. Only it isn't a woman's. You can still make out the face. It's Griffin, the caretaker.
Dr. Norton, I am so glad that you've gotten here.
I came as soon as I could, Mr. Seaton. What's wrong?
She's worse, Doctor.
Oh?
Much worse. Been in her room all day, hiding like a frightened child. I think the reading made her worse.
Reading? What reading?
Well, for the past few days, she's been reading books about her family history.
Why did you let her have them?
Well, because at first they seemed to quiet her. Since the night we found Mr. Griffin's body in that grave, she's wanted to know more and more about Hester Randolph.
Paul.
Oh, Sarah. Dr. Norton's here, dear.
You've got to warn him, Paul, before it's too late.
Warn who, Mrs. Seaton?
Judge Foster. He's in danger. Hester will kill him next.
What?
It's in the records of the court. The magistrate who sentenced Hester to death at the stake was a man named Foster.
Now, Mrs. Seaton, you're just upset.
Please, believe me. Judge Foster is a direct descendant of that magistrate.
Sarah, Hester's dead, dear. The dead can do no harm.
Paul, you don't understand. She's killed one man already, and now she's going to kill another. She swore she'd get that revenge on the magistrate and on the man who was her accuser.
Seaton, all this took place over 100 years ago.
Then what about Mr. Griffin?
Well, what do you mean, sir?
He had the same name, too. According to the record, Hester's accuser was a man named Richard Griffin.
So, Judge Foster, my wife insisted that I come over here and warn you about Hester.
Well, thank you, Mr. Seaton, for troubling, but I'm not a bit worried about the similarity of names.
Well, I didn't admit it to Sarah, but the coincidence with Griffin was strange.
Well, the dead never frightened me, Mr. Seaton. But thank you for coming over. Oh, by the way, can I drive you home?
No, thanks. Dr. Norton is waiting for me outside. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Seaton. Now, where did I put those glasses of mine? Sure, I left them here on the table. Wait. Say, who opened that door? Is that you come back, Mr. Seaton? Well, confound it, whoever it is, answer me. Who's out there? What? Who is it?
It's me, you
traitor of justice. What? Who are you?
Your conscience has been dimmed by the evil of your acts. Who am I? Mark you well this torch I light. Now mark you also my God. This black garment I wear and upon which you had impressed the wicked lips. W.
Hester.
I, Satan's magistrate, Hester Randolph.
You are listening to Inner Sanctum, brought to you by More and more people are turning to Bromo Seltzer all the time because it fights headache fast and fights it all three ways. First, it quickly fights the pain of the headache itself.
Then it soothes upset stomach and jumpy nerves that may often team up with a headache.
That's right, folks. Bromo-Seltzer does three jobs, fast and pleasantly. Just put a teaspoonful of Bromo-Seltzer in a glass and add water. It fizzes immediately, sparkling and refreshing, ready to help your headache all three ways.
Why wait, folks? Keep that familiar blue bottle handy at home and at your place of business.
Yes, friends, it's smart to be prepared for headaches at all times with Bromo-Seltzer. It's on sale at all drugstores. Get a bottle today or tomorrow. Simply ask for
that Hester character. You know, that's the way a dame gets when she's burned up. Makes a specter of herself. You know, folks, I kind of feel sorry for old Judge Foster. When Hester showed up, the poor guy didn't know which way to turn. To turn away which way. They should have believed Sarah Seaton. She sure had Hester dead, or rather alive, to ride. Yes, indeed, it's a wise descendant who knows her own forebears. Particularly the grave-minded one. Well, now, let's get back to our flaming fable and see what's cooking for the next stanza.
Paul! Paul, wake up! Paul, please, wake up!
Oh, Sarah, what's the matter, darling?
I've just had a terrible dream. I'm afraid.
No, easy.
I dreamt that Judge Foster was killed tonight by Hester. You did warn Judge Foster, didn't you, Paul?
Yes, of course, Sarah. Where are you going, dear?
I'm getting dressed. I'm going down to tell the judge myself.
You are staying here.
Oh, please let me go. It means a man's life.
You heard what Dr. Norton said, dear. Under no circumstances are you to leave the house. You're to talk to no one.
Why am I being kept here like a prisoner? Why don't you let me speak to... Oh, what was that?
It sounded like a door banging in the wind. Yes. There it is again.
It's in the rear of the house. Didn't you lock that back door?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I did. I'd better see what happened.
Wait, I'm going with you. I'd better turn on a light here in the kitchen.
No, you won't have to. I can see. It's the door, all right. Guess I must have forgotten to spring the latch at that.
Paul!
Sarah, what's the matter?
Out there, by the trees at the end of the lawn. I thought I saw a figure.
All right, you stay here, dear. I'll be right back. No one out here, Sarah.
You sure?
Positive. Probably just a shadow.
Whoa! There is someone by here!
Sarah! What happened? Sarah. Where are you? Sarah! She was standing here, Sheriff. Right here at the back door when I heard her scream.
There wasn't a sign of her when you got back here at the door?
Not a sign of her.
Well, folks just don't vanish into thin air, Mr. Seaton. She must be around here someplace.
I've got to find her before it's too late.
Too late? What do you mean by that?
I don't know, really. I have a feeling that...
Oh, now, you're not going to tell me about dead witches returning, too, are you? Don't tell me you believe in that stuff.
I don't know what to believe.
Sheriff, is that you, Sheriff?
Yes, who's there?
Dr. Norton. You'd better come with me, Sheriff. I just discovered something on the side of the road, about a mile away. Mr. Seaton, I think you'd better wait here.
What is it, Dr. Norton? What have you found?
I'd rather you'd wait, as I said before, until we're sure.
What are you trying to hide from me?
I guess you better speak up, Doctor. If it's something that concerns Mr. Seaton, maybe he should know.
All right, Sheriff. When I made the turn into the road, my headlights caught it in a ditch. I wasn't sure at first, so I stopped the car and got out. There was a body in the ditch. A charred body. This way, Sheriff. Over here to the right.
What? Where is she?
Easy now, Mr. Seaton.
Right here, Sheriff.
Oh, wait, I'll switch on the flashlight. There.
Sarah.
Wait. Just a moment, Mr. Seaton. Dr. Norton has made a mistake.
What?
This corpse isn't your wife. I can tell by that ring. It's the ring that Judge Foster always wore.
Hello? Oh, yes, Sheriff. Any news yet? Well, why can't your men find her? It's been 6 hours already. No, I haven't heard a word. Yes. Please call me as soon as you hear anything, will you? Who's there? Who is it?
Oh, open the door. Fine.
Sarah!
Yes, quick, let me in.
Oh, Sarah, thank the Lord you're all right.
Oh, no.
Darling, where have you been? What happened to you?
Wait, lock the door quickly.
But you...
She doesn't know I've come back. She's still looking for
Who?
Me. Hester. She was out there, Paul. That's why I ran from the house. She called to me from the road, made me go with her.
Go where?
To the cemetery. She kept me there, torturing me, begging me to change places with her.
Darling, you're not making sense.
Please, believe me. We've got to get away from here tonight, right now. She'll kill me if we don't. She wants my life for the one she never lived.
Now, stop it. Stop. Now, get hold of yourself. There is no such woman as Hester Randolph.
But I saw her. I spoke to her.
But the woman you saw is somebody else, somebody living, who wants you to believe that she's Hester. She wants everybody to believe it.
But why, Paul, why?
Because she's a cold-blooded murderess. She's killed 2 people already, and she's trying to drive you out of your mind completely.
Then who? Who could it be?
I wasn't sure before. Now I'm almost positive. It's Dr. Norton.
Dr. Norton?
Now, you saw this Hester, Sarah. What was she like?
Oh, like a ghost.
Hmm?
Like a shadow in the light. You can see her face, and yet you can see through it, beyond.
No, that was just an illusion created by the night, dear. Oh. And perhaps some other tricks of a clever, scheming woman. You'll see. I'll prove that Dr. Norton is... That's the back door, Sarah. Blown open again.
Leave it. We've got to get out of here.
No, you stay here. I'm going to see who opened that door.
Please, hurry. Don't leave me alone so long. Not in a moment. Paul!
What is it, Sarah?
Don't come in here. Don't come back. I'll run away as fast as you can.
What's the matter?
Don't come in here. Leave here. Hester!
Sarah!
Look out! I've got the gun out of the desk. I've got a gun!
Sarah! Are you all right?
I've killed her, Paul. She won't torture me anymore. I killed Hester. She came toward me and I fired.
Sarah, there's no one in this room, dear.
Over there, in the hall. She's there.
Where? I don't see her. Good Lord, you've broken the mirror.
What?
You shot it yourself.
No. It can't be. I can't be her. And yet I saw her face.
But it was my face, too.
Sarah. It was you. You all the time.
I am Hester, fair gentleman. It is warming to have such a friend as you to stand beside me in this mockery of justice.
Oh, Sarah.
Run! Run as fast as you can, Paul. I was wrong. I haven't killed her. Run!
Sarah, I've got to help you. I've got to explain to you that
you're... But I'm not Sarah. Not anymore. Can't you see who I am? Can't you see who's taken my place?
Sarah, listen to me. I love you. Please, come back to me.
Sarah's gone. Now I can live the years they took from me.
Sarah.
See in my hand this pistol. He will bid as I say. He will come with me.
Still no answer, Sheriff.
No answer, Dr. Norton. I can't understand it. Mr. Seaton was home when I called just 15 minutes ago.
I warned you, Sheriff, to have that house closely watched.
Well, I can't do 100 things at once. I've got every available deputy out looking for Mrs. Seaton.
Don't you realize she may have gone back to their house? Don't you realize that she's the one who might be Hester?
Mrs. Seaton? Hester? What the deuce are you talking about?
I'm talking about dual personality. Mrs. Seaton is suffering from a nervous breakdown. And it's entirely possible that she's the one who killed Griffin and Judge Foster.
Well, you should have told me this before, Doctor. Come on, we're getting right over to the Seaton house.
Here, Paul. They buried Hester's body here. Dishonored and unnamed. But, Paul, you believe in my innocence?
Yes, Sarah. We better go back, dear.
Back?
Just to the house. Very cold here.
It's cold everywhere, Paul. I feel the chill of death coming near me. You and I are going back. Back through time. To an age where no one can harm us. This torch I hold. It will free us forever.
No, wait. Now, Sarah, please, listen. Now, try to understand, dear. You
steal your mind, the flames will be of no pain. I know. Because I've been through such a death before.
No. Now, Sarah, wait. You...
Paul. Hester's going.
Oh,
Mr. Seaton, yeah. Are you all right?
Yes.
Looks like we got here just in time.
Paul. She's crying for me. Forever.
Oh, Sarah.
She's dead, Mr. Seaton.
I'm sorry, Mr. Seaton.
Sheriff.
What is it? What's the matter?
Look, the headstone, I didn't notice that before. It's been recut.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, don't you see what it says? Hester Randolph, a lost soul. Born October 13, 1759. Died September 12,
1949. Say, have you had your personality split lately? You see what happens when a dame gets her dates mixed up? Poor Hester. She didn't know whether she was coming or going to the grave. Now, look, if you should be in an old New England cemetery some night and one of the headstones should move, don't be frightened. It's probably just Hester coming up for a hot date again. Oh, by the way, there's no parting moral attached to tonight's tale. I'll just leave you with your own thoughts. As horrible as I hope they are.
Friends, it's so foolish to suffer with an ordinary headache when Bromo Seltzer gives you such fast, pleasant, three-way relief.
It's true, Mr. Weiss. Bromo Seltzer is so pleasant to take, and it works so fast to help your headache all three ways.
Yes, Bromo Seltzer speedily fights the headache pain itself. Then it goes right to work to soothe the upset stomach and jangled nerves that often may team up with a headache. Try it next time you get a headache. Prove to yourself just how fast it works to help your headache all three ways.
We've tried a lot of headache products, but it's Bromo Seltzer from now on for our family.
You'll say the same thing, too, once you've discovered Bromo Seltzer. So get a bottle today and be prepared at all times to fight a headache fast all three ways.
It's smart to keep Bromo Seltzer both at home and at your place of business.
That's right, folks. Remember, Bromo Seltzer gives you fast three-way help for a headache. It's on sale at all drugstores. Caution, use only as directed. If headaches recur or persist, see your doctor. Get Bromo Seltzer today and...
Fight headache three-way.
Another seven-day rest until next week at this time, when Bromo Seltzer brings you another Inner Sanctum Mystery, directed by Hyman Brown. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum Mystery novel is Hanged by Your Neck by Henry Kane. Next week, you'll hear a love story. It's all about a man who loves to kill and a woman who loves a murderer and a murderer who loves a woman. It's the eternal triangle, but dipped in blood. So won't you be with us when we take you on a honeymoon in a chamber of horrors? Until next Monday, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
This is Dwight Weist inviting you to tune in again next Monday at the same time to Inner Sanctum, Quest, which is brought to you for your entertainment every Monday by... This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, boy! Like, I'm so scared. No, no, this time, really, kids, I am scared this time, but what can I say after that ghost host fella, huh? He used all my jokes up. Yeah, huh? Well, he's dead now, so the joke's on him, huh? Yes. Oh, dumb boy. Dumb, dumb. No, I was just kidding. Then again, I guess I'm dead, too, so what can I say, huh? Really? Yeah, tell me about it. I get no respect. No respect for the dead, huh? But you know what they say? He who laughs last, laughs dead, huh? Thank you, thank you. So until next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Pleasant screams, huh?
Now returns control of your radio device to you until next week. No.